The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Brian, Judge Jessen, Judge Klapacki, the Honorable Jeffrey M. Bryan presiding. This morning's case is A21-1594, in re the matter of Matthew Chandler.
Good morning, counsel. Welcome and thank you for being willing to participate in this remote argument. The same rules would apply to this argument that would apply if we were in the MJC. But I do want to make a couple of things clear at the outset. First off, we ask that when you're not speaking, you put yourself on mute, and only the attorneys themselves and the judges will have an opportunity to speak or share their screens, or only those screens are visible. Also, a note about the clock. If you're in the gallery view, you should be able to see the clock okay. Sometimes people toggle into the speaker view and then that clock gets really small. So I want to make sure you can see how much time is available for you. And then the last thing I'll say is that we do understand, because of the nature of these remote proceedings, that from time to time we have technical glitches or problems. Maybe there's a doorbell or a pet that jumps in the screen or something. We understand that those can happen. We'll try to do our best to keep them to a minimum, but we will make sure to accommodate any problems so that you have all the time to which you're entitled this morning. And I want to make sure that you all, if there is a problem, let us know so right away so we can try and resolve it. Are you both able to hear me okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and I can hear the both of you just fine. Judges, are we ready to proceed? Any problems on your end?
No problems here.
Okay. Well, in that case, Ms. Renslow is the attorney for Relator. You may proceed.
Good morning, everyone. So to begin, at the outset of the COVID-19 pandemic, the CARES Act established a federal program called the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance. This coverage was for individuals who don't typically qualify for unemployment benefits under traditional state laws. And Relator Matthew Chandler is one of those individuals who may not have qualified under traditional state laws for unemployment benefits, but he is exactly the person for whom these pandemic unemployment assistance benefits were created. So just as background, Mr. Chandler initially applied for pandemic unemployment assistance, or PUA benefits, based on his unemployment due to COVID-19. So prior to the pandemic, Mr. Chandler went door to door soliciting work, offering his services such as, you know, mowing the lawn or other odd jobs around the neighborhood. And then once the pandemic hit, Mr. Chandler was simply unable to find or obtain work due to COVID-19. For example, even when Mr. Chandler was wearing a mask when approaching these homes, people were still wary of letting him into their homes or into their yard because of the pandemic. So regarding Mr. Chandler's application for PUA benefits, DEED initially issued a determination of ineligibility, which Mr. Chandler appealed, and then a hearing was held. And at that hearing, Mr. Chandler was the only person to offer substantive testimony. And he testified consistently and repeatedly that prior to the pandemic, he was able to find work. But since the pandemic, Mr. Chandler was no longer able to find or obtain that same employment. There is absolutely no evidence entered into the record that countered Mr. Chandler's testimony that he was unable to find work due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Ms. Renslow, isn't there a difference between saying it was not contested, it wasn't at the hearing, and there's a difference between that and saying that Mr. Chandler met kind of the proof he needed to be, because he didn't produce any records, or at least not very many records of the income he received from this work. And I the way I read the ULJ's decisions, that you'll just say, you know, found his testimony not credible about the amount of work he'd done before. I mean, so yes. I see a real difference. I mean, I hear you saying it wasn't contested, but that doesn't mean necessarily that he met his burdens, right?
So respectfully, I do disagree with that. So what the ULJ found in this case was kind of two different tracks of credibility determinations. One track was regarding the amount of work that Mr. Chandler performed prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. And then the other track was the credibility determination on whether or not it was plausible that he was unable to find work since COVID-19. And, you know, moving to that factual finding,
Before you move, can you maybe elaborate a little bit? Because I think both tracks, if you want to, I'll adopt your language. I think both tracks are important, right? Because it seems like you have to make a comparison. This is what pre-pandemic employment looked like. This is what post. So you have to have both being credible in order to reach the conclusion that the relator wants the ULJ to reach, right? So maybe you can elaborate on why that distinction is really very important if both tracks must be credible.
Right. So to qualify for PUA benefits, I'll read the standard real quick. It is just that an individual who works as an independent contractor with reportable income may qualify for PUA benefits if he is unemployed, partially employed, or unable to find work due to COVID-19. So those determinations on, you know, the amount of work that Mr. Chandler performed prior to the pandemic.
What evidence did Mr. Chandler present to show what his income was prior to the pandemic?
So he provided, I'll quickly address your question, Judge. So he provided his testimony related to that. But just to be clear, there's been absolutely no dispute over the fact that he did perform some amount of work prior to COVID-19. The ULJ even found that he did perform some jobs for cash prior to COVID-19. The dispute, and this kind of goes to your question, Judge Brian, the dispute is over the amount of work, which really has no bearing on whether or not he is eligible for these PUA benefits. The standard is whether or not he had any form of reportable income prior to COVID-19, and then whether he was, you know,
but he was unable to show that he'd filed tax returns or had any receipts for anything. He had no documentary evidence to back up his verbal statements about what he was earning before pandemic.
That is correct. The ULJ did discredit any sort of receipts or the documentation that Mr. Chandler submitted related to his reportable income. However, the ULJ did not find that he had no reportable income prior to COVID-19, which is the real issue in this case.
So if I may, Ms. Winslow, so your position is as long as there was any reportable income, even if it wasn't reported, that's enough to meet your first track.
Yes, correct. That is our position. And, you know, that's also what the record has established, that he does have that reportable income. And that's all that's needed under the standard to qualify under these benefits. These benefits were created, you know, for these situations, for these independent contractors, these gig workers who, you know, traditionally do not meet the standard of unemployment benefits. But under PUA, they do meet that standard. And then, you know, going back to the ULJ's finding that it was, you know, quote, not plausible that he was unable to find work since COVID-19.
Is that really a finding, or is that a statement about credibility?
Yeah, you're correct, Your Honor. It does speak to his credibility, but, you know, what the ULJ relied upon in that credibility determination is a completely unfounded personal opinion. The ULJ based its entire, you know, statement on the plausibility on, quote, it is highly unlikely that individuals are still unwilling to let Chandler mow their lawns or come into their homes due to safety concerns as case numbers decline and vaccination rates increase. You know, there is absolutely no testimony, no record evidence presented, you know, one, about these case numbers or vaccination rates, or two, how people would react to these case numbers or vaccination rates. Taking notice of that, you know, let alone taking notice of vaccination rates or case numbers, but taking notice of how individuals may or may not react to that.
You know, you don't think this is an ALJ applying his concept of common sense?
So Deed admits that there was an error in even taking notice in this, because you are correct. The ULJ can take notice of common knowledge. And, you know, had the ULJ put on the record of, I am taking notice of vaccination rates and case numbers, and given Mr. Chandler the ability to refute that evidence, I still don't think that's enough for the ULJ to rely upon in, you know, making these assumptions of how individuals may react to this.
Well, Ms. Renslow, as we're talking about the reactions of other people, it strikes me that one way to think of the testimony provided and perhaps why it was discredited as implausible or speculative is because of the nature of the statement itself, that nobody is answering their doors anymore. In other words, the statement is what is providing the evidence or the speculation about what other individuals may or may not be doing. And the ULJ is looking at that and saying, well, there's not any proof that other people are acting in the way that the relator is speculating. So it seems to me that that's part of the credibility determination and not a basis to conclude that the ULJ relied on something outside the record, because it's the statement itself is what focuses on other people's actions.
Yes, I could definitely see that. However, you know, the PUA benefits kicked in, you know, right at the start of COVID-19. So when the ULJ was making this decision, it was June 2021, you know, significant time had passed. So even taking Mr. Chandler's statements, I mean, in summer 2020, you know, people may not have been answering their doors at that point. And so for this entire duration of time, Mr. Chandler was searching for employment. And, you know, there is no evidence showing that people were, you know, willing to allow him to work.
I understand Mr. Chandler said that he was going out on a daily basis.
Correct. Yep. He did testify that to
But then he's saying nobody's allowing him in. Nobody's allowing contact.
Yes, I mean, those were his statements, but there's also
more believable to say I went out 10 times and only two people were willing to even talk to me. But he didn't say that. He says nobody.
I mean, putting yourselves in that position of a stranger walks up to your door during a pandemic.
Saying the persuasiveness of his argument would have been enhanced if he said I'm out every day and I see 8 to 10 people a day. And of those 8 or 10 people, zero of those folks were willing even to talk to me. Is that different than saying nobody's willing to open their door, nobody's willing to talk to me?
I recognize that difference a little bit. I mean, this was a pro se applicant. You know, maybe his testimony wasn't as nuanced as it should have been to make his point at that time. But I mean, the issue is that he was substantially affected by COVID-19 in obtaining or finding this employment. And even if the ULJ's determination was in June 2021, you know, that might be a different story. But in June 2020, perhaps people are just locking up their homes.
Well, my reaction is, I'll ask your colleague about that, but it might be just as implausible to conclude that everybody was willing to let him in during the pandemic that were willing to let him in before the pandemic.
Right. And he did testify that some of his repeat customers no longer wanted to work with him during the pandemic, which I think is, you know, substantial evidence showing that he was impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic in maintaining his employment even.
So, Ms. Renslow, if I may turn to a slightly different track. I'm kind of going back to my any reportable income, you know, question. It seems to me in your two tracks that you identified to Judge Brian at the beginning, that perhaps what were the your client's customary work activities, they clearly would relate to kind of track one, right? You know, was there any reportable income? But don't they also come in under your second track? Because I'm just looking at the definitions out of your brief on who may qualify for this funding. it says, okay, in reportable income, if he or she is now unemployed or unavailable to work because of COVID, to continue performing his or her customary work activities. So isn't what your client customarily did not only important to track one, but to track two? And if there, could you help me with that?
Yes. Sorry, I'll clarify that. So yes, his customary work is important to track one and two. You know, kind of what I was referencing before is, you know, Deed argues in its brief that the amount of work or discrepancies in testimony regarding the amount of work performed, you know, kind of lays the foundation for the ULJ's ultimate determination that it's, quote, not plausible that he was unable to find employment. The testimony related to how much he worked and those findings regarding how much he worked is completely separated, as the ULJ only relied on its own personal opinions about whether or not people would be answering the door at that point for its determination that it's not plausible he was unable to find work.
But I'm saying, asking a slightly different question, that what your client's customary work activities, what kind of work, how much work he did before COVID, is also important to your track two argument.
Because, yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so even if we don't get to what were his opportunities afterwards, you have to also have a comparison to what was he doing beforehand, right?
Yes, that is true. But through his testimony, and which is, you know, uncontroverted, he has established that his customary work activities are going door to door, soliciting work. And at the end of the day, the ULJ found that, you know, he did perform some services doing gig work prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. And that's considered his customary work. And then the next determination is whether or not, you know, his gig work was substantially affected by COVID-19. And I'm out of time, but I'll just save my response for the rebuttal.
You can go ahead and finish your thought if you wanted to, and then we'll come back to you when you get to your 5 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So it's really just that, you know, his, honestly, I kind of lost my train of thought at this point, so I'll save it for rebuttal.
I kind of lost it as well. So we'll just leave it for rebuttal. I think it makes the most sense. Thank you. Mr. Allen, on behalf of the department.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Lawson Allen. I represent the respondent, Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, in this issue. The court has a couple of questions to answer on this issue. First, whether the applicant, or the relator, Mr. Chandler, satisfies the criterion for PUA eligibility, and whether the unemployment law judge's credibility determinations are supported by the record. The panel has picked up on an important distinction or two tracks here in this issue. And while there is no threshold for employment or services performed in order to trigger eligibility under PUA prior to the pandemic, the legislation clearly points out that the unemployment must be caused by the pandemic itself. And that is distinct from having employment efforts frustrated by the pandemic. In this case, the unemployment law judge did not find the applicant or Mr. Chandler's testimony credible that he engaged in a substantial or significant or measurable amount of self-employment prior to.
If I can stop you there, Mr. Allen, and ask you to kind of repeat that distinction that you're making for me. It sounded like you're making a distinction between these customary activities are affected and like maybe a distinction that matter of degree that the pandemic terminated them or prevented any of them from happening. So I'm not sure what the distinction is that you're making, and B, what kind of distinction it is if it's just a matter of degree or something of a different kind. So maybe you can pause for me and repeat what you were, your point there.
Thank you, Your Honor. Legislation is clear that with respect to self-employed individuals, the self-employment must be substantially affected. They must be unemployed or partially employed because of the pandemic. And in later changes, DOL issued guidance to indicate that For purposes of PUA coverage, an individual lacking sufficient work history with a recent attachment to the labor force who does not have significant wages in covered employment, who becomes unemployed or partially unemployed because of COVID-19 reasons, may be eligible, but it is not sufficient to have your job seeking efforts frustrated. So there must be some level of self-employment that is impacted by the pandemic. In this issue, the unemployment law judge found that the applicant, Mr. Chandler's testimony, that he was regularly engaged in or had a measurable level of self-employment, incredible. And as a consequence, was able to reach the second tract that the pandemic affected or did not affect his self-employment. The reason being, he just didn't have much or any to speak of that the judge found credible. The judge gets there by taking a look at what the applicant was able to produce in terms of evidence in support of his assertion that he worked in self-employment at a rate of about $3,000 a month, as far as his testimony is concerned. And the applicant was able to produce one piece of dated evidence, a receipt from 2018 for performances and services in which the applicant earns $200. A second receipt was produced that indicated an additional payment received, but no date for services. The applicant had filed no taxes in 2018, 2019. When asked if the applicant planned to file for 2020, the applicant reported he would not report earnings, but would fill out a non-filer's form in order to gain eligibility for economic stimulus payments. The ULJ took that testimony combined with the documentary evidence and found inconsistencies in the testimony and relied upon those pieces of evidence in the record to find that the applicant's testimony was incredible. And that was the basis for...
You agree, would you not, that gig workers have a difficult time having a paper trail record of what it is they do?
I dispute that, and for a number of reasons.
Well, they don't have any. They don't have any employer who's going to give them a W-2 or a 1099. Some will give receipts, and some won't. You acknowledge that's different than the regular kind of employment, don't you?
I acknowledge that the tax reporting forms are absolutely different, Your Honor. However, an individual engaged in self-employment has the onus of producing records for tax filing. And upon that is a paper trail. Contemporarily, many self-employed or gig workers receive payments through electronic platforms. Those are great record-keeping devices. They generate 1040s for users, platforms like PayPal and other e-pay measures. And that, in addition to the paper receipts that the applicant testified he had but could not produce for 2019 or 2020, indicate that while it may be more difficult than someone in a standard employment relationship, certainly within his capacity.
So if I may, just to follow up, it seems to me that you all are talking about two different standards. So Ms. Winslow says, look, the issue is, did he have any reportable income before the pandemic from self-employment, even if it wasn't reported? And you seem to be saying he has a burden of proving that he was consistently self-employed before the pandemic. Okay, so I see, help me here, because I see where, at least in the definition under the, I think, about any individual who works with any reportable income, I see that reference. So where exactly do you get the standard of he has to show that he was consistently self-employed before the pandemic and that requires records of some sort?
Your Honor, there's no standard of a showing of any level of employment. But in order to become PUA eligible, the applicant, or the requirement is that you show an effect because of the pandemic. So the judge is tasked with determining whether there is an effect on the applicant's self-employment. And to get there, you've got to understand what the self-employment level was prior to the pandemic. So while there's no eligibility threshold, it's case by case. In this case, because the applicant...
Well, there was his testimony that before the pandemic, he went door to door. And his testimony was that after the pandemic, that wasn't working anymore.
That is accurate. The applicant testified that prior to the pandemic, he did a couple of things. Went door to door, and he engaged in gig work through Craigslist advertisements, or answering Craigslist ads. In addition, the applicant testified that in 2019, prior to the onset of the pandemic, he earned $11,000. The applicant testified that prior to the onset of the pandemic in 2020, he earned $9,000. When asked whether the applicant was still engaging in that door-to-door type of activity in 2020, the applicant indicated that, yes, he had. He was still doing it. It wasn't producing fruit. And when asked whether he was still engaged in gig work or Craigslist pursuit of gig work, he testified that he suspended those efforts because...
Mr. Allen, this kind of gets back to the distinction you were making earlier between job-seeking efforts and the effect that the pandemic may have had on job-seeking efforts, and the distinction between that and measurable change to employment, which I think we're using reportable income as a you know, kind of proxy to measure change in employment. Are you saying that even if we believe the testimony, or if the ULJ believed the testimony, that the pandemic caused a change in job seeking efforts, that change is, and that the change to job seeking efforts may have resulted in a change in reportable income, but that's too indirect a causation?
I think that a fair characterization would be that if we were to completely credit the applicant's testimony and discount the unemployment law judge's credibility finding that he did not engage in self-employment in 2019, you would be left with an applicant who's reporting that he did a couple different types of services in 2019 pre-pandemic. He made about $13,000 in irregularly scheduled work. In 2020, after the onset of the pandemic, he made $11,000 in the first quarter. And portions of his self-employment, the door-to-door stuff, were impacted because of fears. However, he suspended doing the Craigslist gig component because it didn't pay enough. So you've got someone who in the first quarter of 2020 it had about as good a year as he'd had in 2019. You're left to wrestle whether the impact of the pandemic on his self-employment, if you credit his testimony and discount the unemployment law judge's credibility assessment, is self-election or pandemic related. If he's just not doing the gig work to have an equal year because he's not as immediately profitable as he testified.
It's almost like you're saying that the pandemic might change the job-seeking efforts or the customary job-seeking efforts, and the self-employed person then has to adapt and come up with new job-seeking efforts. And if he doesn't, that's not a drop in income that is caused by the pandemic. That's a drop in income that's caused by somebody's decision not to adapt or be flexible. Is that essentially the argument that you want us to adopt on causation?
Well, it's not the argument that I'm hoping to forward here. And this is really just with respect to answering your question about the income levels, Your Honor. First, I would like to make clear that the unemployment law judge who heard this case did not credit his testimony that he was engaged in regular handyman services or gig work in 2019, and found that he's not eligible for PUA as a consequence of that. So to the judge who heard this hearing, the applicant, Mr. Chandler, fails on the first track. To get to the second track, there's got to be a drop-off in effect. And I talk about the income levels, and I talk about if you were to completely disregard the unemployment law judge's credibility finding and analyze this thing based only on Mr. Chandler's testimony, you're left with someone whose income levels, or really employment levels, seem to be affected by election in addition to if there's a drop off to door-to-door receipts. But that is not that's not the position that I'm attempting to forward here, Your Honor, just a response to your question on the income levels.
If I can ask another clarification question. So from your from the department's perspective, because the ULJ made the credibility assessment that his testimony about the amount of work he performed prior to the pandemic wasn't credible, and because that's required to be able to measure the impact of the pandemic, kind of to paint the before picture, we don't need to reach the issue about whether the judge made, basically took judicial notice of facts or inappropriately assessed facts dealing with his post-pandemic work efforts. Is that
That's accurate, Your Honor. Yes, the deed briefs that if the judge erred in making a finding regarding virus proliferation or vaccine proliferation in the Monticello era, that error was harmless. And you're exactly right, Your Honor. It's because the first track is discredited by the unemployment law judge. Well, thank you very much. If there are no other questions from the panel, I'll sit down.
Thank you. Ms. Renslow, your 5 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you. So just to first speak to that, the DOL guidance that Deed cited to, so that states that an individual must not be unemployed because of, not being able to find a job because some businesses have closed and or they are not hiring. So Mr. Chandler is not alleging that he qualifies because of that. He's arguing he qualifies because he is an independent contractor or gig worker that had reportable income prior to COVID-19. And then that was severely limited because of the pandemic. So that guidance does not really apply to the situation at hand. And then just, going back to that the ULJ's finding that it is, not plausible that he did not have any sort of income after COVID-19, again, because that's based on this personal opinion that was taken judicial notice of, that's kind of where this whole decision stems from. Speaking to the effects that Mr. Chandler felt, I mean, it's established in the record, the ULJ found that he did have some amount of reportable income prior to COVID-19. Those may be just in odd jobs paid in cash, but that does qualify. And then the, uncontroverted evidence submitted at the hearing shows that he had no income after the start of COVID-19. And, that enough is to establish the effects. There's no evidence showing that there was anything to the contrary. So just looking at the legal standard of the PUA benefits, because Mr. Chandler is this independent contractor who had reportable income, and because he was affected by COVID-19 and was unable to obtain or perform his customary duties after COVID-19, he qualifies for PUA benefits. And he is exactly the type of person for whom these benefits were created for. These standards are meant to be, kind of the catch-all for those people that traditionally fall between the cracks. And Mr. Chandler is exactly that type of person. So for those reasons, Mr. Chandler requests that this court reverse the ULJ's opinion. And with that, I'll rest unless there are any questions.
Ms. Renslow, maybe you can address the argument regarding a change to job-seeking efforts, specifically if what is the impact of the testimony that, as Mr. Allen puts it, there was an election to change the use of Craigslist in order to get hired. What do we make of that testimony? And is that sort of a secondary potential cause of the change in employment?
Yeah, I mean, the test is really whether or not his customary work activities were affected. Those customary work activities is that gig work. So is he required to put out Craigslist ads? I don't think that's in the standard whatsoever. His customary activities were going door to door, and that was significantly affected. I think the argument related to Craigslist would, you know, kind of fall under that DOL guidance that doesn't really apply in this situation of, you know, businesses aren't hiring, and that's not enough of an excuse to qualify for these benefits. But here, you know, Mr. Chandler is simply trying to perform the same work that he was doing prior to COVID, and that's all he needed to show in order to qualify. If there are no other questions, thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thank you both. We will take the matter under advisement.